Hey y'all, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the worlds of fitness and nutrition. I'm so excited about today's episode, so make sure you listen in and get ready to learn. Welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition. Today's guest is Dr. Eric Balkovich. I call him the Thyroid King. If you have not listened to his Thyroid Answers podcast, it is a wealth of information and knowledge. So if you struggle with hypothyroidism, get ready. This episode is going to be jam-packed with information, but make sure you run over to his podcast, you run over to his website, which I'll make sure he tells you about, but a variety and host and great detailed information for you guys. So Dr. Eric, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. It's great.
Of course. Now, can you tell my listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what made you pursue your passion in focusing on thyroid disorders?
Well, I had no intention of getting involved with thyroid physiology when I initially got into chiropractic care. I mean, initially, my initial process was in college was I thought I was going to go off to medical school. An accident kind of changed the trajectory of that. Met a chiropractor. He helped me get back to health. And so then I changed my direction and headed off to chiropractic school. But when I graduated from chiropractic school, I was doing chiropractic care. I mean, I wasn't really doing much with nutrition. I really did not know much about thyroid physiology at all. However, somebody in my family got diagnosed with hypothyroidism and fibroids and anemia, and the recommendations that were provided for her didn't sit well necessarily with them, and they came to me and said, "Hey, we need some help." And I said, "Hey, you got the wrong person. This is not what I do." But when it's your brother talking to you, you
find a way.
Yeah. So I wound up, starting digging into the literature and starting learning more about thyroid physiology, went to as many courses as I could, trained under Dr. Karazian, who was at the time, I think one of the leading experts in functional medicine on thyroid physiology. And, since then it's just become, it's become something I'm totally enveloped in, and it hit home. I got multiple family members that have some level of hypothyroidism. I developed my own Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism. And when you start talking to patients, just as a chiropractor, and I start talking to patients, I did not realize how big of a problem it was and how many people actually had hypothyroidism. You just don't realize that it's as big of an issue as it is, because nobody's, people are talking about it, but it's not something that is really talked about. You don't see TV commercials about hypothyroidism like you do, reflux and high uric acid and gout and depression and anxiety. And thyroid hormone medication is like been a top 10 selling medications for one of the top 10 selling medications for decades. It's usually in the top five. So it's a massive problem, and we need to do something to change the way we look at thyroid physiology, how we identify it. And that's become like my mission and my passion.
Yeah, and the whole struggle too is nowadays people will be diagnosed with hypothyroidism and then they still aren't even getting the education that they need from their own doctors or understanding their disease in the first place. So it's a huge struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest challenge is how we evaluate and look at hypothyroidism. The assumption is, I think it's a fair assumption that when you develop hypothyroidism, it's typically an autoimmune disorder. You develop autoimmune disorders for idiopathic reasons, which means we don't know the answer, which means we can't do anything about it. And the only solution is long-term thyroid support. And the treatment for hypothyroidism is focused on normalizing one lab value. It's called TSH. And the medication can work really effectively to normalize TSH. And so the thought process is we fixed the problem. And in the reality, we haven't really fixed more than a TSH value. And to some degree, we might even argue that we're actually doing potentially more harm than benefit. And so I think what happens in hypothyroidism is we look at the hypothyroid condition like it's the disorder, and I think it's the wrong way to look at it. I think we have to look at hypothyroidism from, take a step back and say, why is the body trying to slow down metabolism by it destroying or getting rid of the thyroid gland? That's a different way than allopathic medicine is currently looking at thyroid physiology. And I don't think we're going to help people long term until we actually start looking at what goes on in the body, not as the mistake of the physiology, but our body trying to protect itself against some type of excessive stress or excessive threat.
Yeah, and like I like to tell my clients, your thyroid, your hypothyroidism is a result from some chaos in your body, whether that's a nutrition deficiency, an overgrowth such as SIBO or Candida, heavy metals, stress, cortisol issues. There's a reason why you're hypothyroid. So it's your body screaming to ask you for help.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about thyroid physiology, we think about, hey, thyroid hormones need to increase the metabolism. But thyroid hormone is really the brake or the regulator of energy production. And so when we have chronic stress on the body, whether it's physical stress or chemical stress or emotional stress or microbial stress, environmental stress, whatever, if we have excessive levels of stress, then that's the key. Stress is not really the problem per se, because we need stress. Stress has a hormetic effect. And for those who don't know what that means some is good. There's a sweet spot. Too much is not good. Too little stress is not good, but there's a sweet spot. And when you have a level of stress, it makes us stronger and more adaptable to higher levels of stress. So we need some level of stress. But when stress becomes excessive, then the body needs to shift from what we call normal metabolism or a homeostatic metabolism, where we're all about growth and development and having good GI function and hormones and getting pregnant and doing all these kind of growth and development things. And our body has to shift into cell defense. So it's this nice balance between cell defense and growth and development. And if we start having lots of stress, that puts us into a danger mode, then our body has to shift energy more towards cell defense, and it has to turn down the GI function and hormone production and the less critical things to cell defense or self-defense. And so it's a scale. We kind of look at hypothyroidism like this. It's this overall shutdown of physiology, when really it isn't. If you really look at it, what it is just an adaptation or a shift and how we use energy. And if we're in stress mode, if you're cooking dinner and you got your family around and somebody breaks into your house and starts attacking your family, are you going to stand there and continue to cook the meal, or are you going to go into defense? I think most of us would say, hey, I'm going to go into defense mode. If you've got stress, excessive amounts of stress on your cells and tissues, then your cells and tissues go into defense mode. And what your body does is say, hey, we need to slow down the metabolism, shift energy away from GI function, shift it away from hormonal regulation, shift it away from rest and relaxation, and shift it more towards cell defense. So in a hypothyroid case, we see, hey, my bowel's not working, my hormones and my cycle aren't working. And so we see some of these things that systems get downregulated, and we think, oh, this is terrible, I'm struggling. But it's not a global shutdown, because what we see is an upregulation of the inflammatory system. We see an upregulation of the immune system. We see increased histamine response. We see increased or disruption in sleep patterns. So we're more vigilant. We see upregulation of those fight or flight hormones. So it's not this even total shutdown of physiology in the body. It's an adaptable physiology to some level of excessive stress.
Yeah, we have TSH skyrocketing, trying to tell our thyroid to put out more. So there's just a host of things that can go wrong. And I wanted to bring you on because you are extremely knowledgeable in thyroid physiology and thyroid health. Can you tell my listeners about thyroid hormone availability versus utilization in the body?
Yeah, so one of the big, I think, misunderstandings is that the level of thyroid hormone in the bloodstream is the same as the amount of blood of thyroid hormone that's inside the cells and tissues. And that's not necessarily the case. The body has two regulating systems. You have a central thyroid regulating system, which is your hypothalamus, your pituitary gland, your adrenal gland, your thyroid gland. They call it the HPTA axis. And then you have your peripheral thyroid regulating system. And so if we think about these two systems, the HPTA axis is really about mass production of thyroid hormone, right? The gland produces a bunch of hormone, dumps it into the bloodstream, and that's our ready reserve, right? So there's always or should always be a certain amount of thyroid hormone floating around the bloodstream for available use. Then we have this thing called the peripheral system, which is all your cells and tissues. And the individual cells and tissues then can decide how much thyroid hormone actually comes into a cell, and then how much thyroid hormone is either activated from T4 to T3 or deactivated from T4 to reverse T3 and T3 to one of a couple forms of something called T2. So we've got two regulating systems. When we're in a low stress state, there's a pretty good correlation between what's in the blood and what's in the cell, okay? But when we're in a stressed physiology, then what's in the cell becomes disconnected from what's in the bloodstream. You can have massive differences between what's in a cells and particular tissues to what's actually in the bloodstream. So doctors assume that if there's enough in the bloodstream, it's automatically going to get into the cells and support metabolism. And the reality is that's just not the case.
Yeah. So when patients come to you and their labs look normal, but they're having crippling hypothyroid symptoms, what is the first thing that you want to ask them and look at?
Well, I think the first thing that's most important for the vast majority of people, definitely a good health history, kind of get an idea of what's going on. But then the next piece is to take a look at a good comprehensive blood chemistry panel to be able to compare what's going on with their labs, to their health history, to their symptoms, their timeline. So you put all those pieces together. When somebody says, my doctor said my thyroid's normal or my blood work's normal, and they feel awful, then a couple things are amiss, right? One of those is what got measured, right? Yeah. So if you don't measure anything, everything looks good, right? So if you measure the wrong tests, things may look good. The second part of that is labs, there's different ranges when we talk about lab work. There's what we call the disease range or the lab range. That range is established because that's when you're actually moving into the disease range or the range where medical treatment typically becomes the main treatment, right? You need surgery, you're in a disease state, you're in crisis, we need to do something. And until you get into that state, medical intervention is not usually appropriate. So that's the lab range. That's not the healthy range that people are in. If you think about this like grades in school, the optimal range is like the A range in school. That's a narrower, that's like the peak of the curve on a lab report, right? And then when you look at the lab range, you might as well consider that the failure range, okay? So if you're like right next to the lab range, but not outside the range, and your doctor says everything's great, you're healthy, yeah, that's like saying you got a D minus on the test, you did fantastic, right? Maybe you didn't do as good. So one of those things is, hey, what's being measured? And then what range are they doing? And then the third thing we have to consider when somebody says, hey, your labs are normal, are they reading the lab report for highs and lows? Or is your doctor interpreting the lab report based on you, your signs, your symptoms, mm-hmm. your experiences, right? So there's a difference between reading a lab report and interpreting a lab report. You could have totally normal lab values and it'd be totally appropriate. I feel great, my labs are all great, and then that's probably appropriate. You could have totally normal lab values and it'd be totally inappropriate. If you're tired, you're fatigued, you have all these hypothyroid symptoms, but your TSH is normal or lab low, like your doctor's saying, hey, you don't have a thyroid problem because your TSH is low, you're actually more hyperthyroid, that value is inappropriate for the person that's sitting in front of us. So we can't just look at a lab value and all by itself and say that's normal. We have no idea if that, it may be normal, but it may be totally inappropriate for the person that's sitting in front of us. And that's where a skilled practitioner is going to help somebody. They're going to say, hey, look, you've got all these symptoms. this TSH value is normal or low, even though it's in the normal range, it's inappropriate for you. And so now what we have to consider is, why would you be experiencing all this symptomatology but have a normal TSH? And if we're thinking about just in line with the TSH, the biggest problem we have in this country is chronic low-grade inflammation. Low-grade inflammation actually suppresses TSH levels. So it'll make it look normal, especially in the early stage of thyroid spectrum disorder. And so TSH will look normal. Doctors say, you know, you need to exercise more, you need to eat less, you know, you're just crazy. When in reality, because they maybe didn't look at the rest of the test or didn't run the rest of the inflammatory markers to see you're inflamed, they'll totally read the value instead of interpret the value. The other thing that's really important when we talk about that is you could have an abnormal lab value and it's totally appropriate for how you feel and function. So if somebody came to me, they had a high TSH, they're tired, they're fatigued, their T4 is low, it's abnormal, it's totally appropriate. Do we need to give that person a bunch of thyroid hormone in that situation? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that isn't the thing to do for the person that's sitting in front of me. And some people may be like, what are you talking about? Yeah, if they're hypothyroid, they need it. What we have to ask is, why is that happening?
Amen.
Not just force it into normal range. You know, that's not a problem. We have to ask the question why. And then the last piece of interpreting a lab report is, you could have a totally abnormal lab value and it's totally inappropriate, and that's a huge concern. Example, you feel fantastic. We run a blood panel on you anyway. Your CRP is sky high or your TSH is elevated, but you feel great. We have to then be concerned, like, hey, there's something going on here because this value is abnormal for how you feel. And we got to start looking for the reason why that's a problem before we see consequences that may be more grave and more concerning.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that, and that you point out that to people, you are not your labs. You are a human being with your own bio-individuality, and it's very important that you are interpreted as such, as a person, as a human, and not by numbers. And when it comes down to Hashimoto's, oh, I see it time and time again. People are checked with their doctors. They just check TSH, free T4, free T3, or they don't even check the free levels. And they don't check antibodies. And then what this can do is it misses the antibodies that are causing attack on the thyroid that could go for months to even years, creating even further havoc. And they aren't caught at the beginning of the disease state. And then we have autoimmune destruct to the thyroid.
Yeah, and I think to be fair to a lot of docs, if you read the guidelines, there's really no real need or reason to run the test.
Yeah, technically they tell them they don't have to until antibody TSH is 10, right?
Well, and even then, most docs will assume that for the vast majority of people, at least in this country, the primary cause is going to be an autoimmune condition. So if the 90% of the cases of hypothyroidism are caused by an autoimmune condition, does running thyroid antibodies change the treatment? And that's what makes the test medically necessary, is not whether it's appropriate, but is it medically necessary? And what that means, so your listeners know, if it doesn't change the doctor's treatment, the test is really not medically necessary. Now, you and I might argue, we need to know what TSH, T4, T3, free T4, free T3, T3 uptake, reverse T3, and thyroid advantage. We want to know that it's an autoimmune condition. We want to know what's happening to thyroid hormone. But in that allopathic model, treatment for hypothyroidism is T4 or T4, T3 therapy, if you see a progressive doctor, right? But the treatment is you don't provide thyroid hormone until TSH is high, T4 is low, then you provide more T4 therapy until you normalize TSH. There's no real concern whether it's autoimmune condition. It doesn't make a difference in the current allopathic model. So therefore, most doctors, why would I run it? It's not going to change my treatment. If for the vast majority of allopathic doctors, if they're following the guidelines, it plays no part in their decision making as to whether to treat. The guidelines kind of say, hey, look, when TSH is elevated, T4 is low, you provide enough thyroid hormone to bring the TSH back into normal range. And that's it. End of the day. Story over, right? So unfortunately, you and I and a lot of those in functional medicine, medical doctors that are doing integrative medicine would say that, yes, we need to understand what the treatment paradigm is. Then you can I think for the listeners, it's easier to not be so mad and frustrated at your doctor. They're just following the guidelines. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is change the way we look at thyroid physiology and have an alternative approach, right? And unfortunately, that's not where we're at right now.
No, hopefully one day we will get towards that. I know even in regards to nutrition, it can be that way, right? If somebody's given diabetes right now, if you walk into a hospital setting, they're going to give you just a quote unquote ADA, American Dietetics Association treatment plan. That's not individualized and it's just following strict guidelines. That's a whole nother issue. But what if we can hopefully get to a place in regards to medicine, nutrition, anything in regards to patient care, if we can get to a place where it's focusing more and more on individuality, I think that's where we are going to really start helping more people.
Yeah, and I with every disorder, we're labeling the outcome and then treating the outcome versus saying we have this common outcome, we need to figure out your cause, right? You know, diabetes is a great example. We're I think in allopathic medicine, the focus is on we're assuming that you're diabetic. There's not much you can do about it. So we're going to manage the condition until you die or until you become insulin dependent or whatever, right? So we're managing the disease or the condition. I think there's a place for allopathic medicine, acute care, for those who don't want to work on their health and want to manage a situation, that model's great. But if you're a person who really wants to be healthy, that's not a model for long-term health and well-being. You actually have to get to the root cause issues. Hypothyroidism, what I call cellular hypothyroidism, has a massive tie into diabetes. It's almost impossible to be diabetic, type 2 diabetic, without having some level of cellular hypothyroidism going on. Why? Because the glucose transporters, GLUT1, GLUT2, GLUT3, GLUT4, they all require adequate amounts of thyroid hormone, T3, inside the cell for them to work appropriately. So for your listeners, in case they don't know, GLUT4 is the insulin-dependent glucose transporter. So you eat, you release insulin, insulin binds to that receptor and pulls more glucose into your tissues and cells. If you have what I call cellular hypothyroidism, where your thyroid hormone's you have reduced levels of thyroid hormone in the cell, that GLUT4 transporter is not going to work well. And so what you're going to see is increased blood sugar. You're going to see increased insulin production, at least early on, because the body's trying to figure out what to do with this stuff. But even at a basal rate, when you're not eating, there's glucose transporter 1, glucose transporter 3. Those pull glucose in when you're not eating. Those glucose transporters are also thyroid hormone T3 dependent inside the cell. So if you have cellular hypothyroidism, you don't have enough thyroid hormone inside the cell, active thyroid hormone, those transporters aren't going to work efficiently either at many tissues, and you're going to start to develop insulin resistance, blood sugar problems, and eventually diabetes. And that's a complicated, so we won't go down that because that's probably heavy chemistry.
It's a big rabbit hole.
Right. But the key is there is a tie-in to of thyroid physiology to almost every chronic condition we have. The mistake I think we make is that we're assuming there isn't a thyroid problem until TSH mm-hmm. is elevated and T4 is low, and we say, okay, now you have a thyroid problem, when in reality, hypothyroidism actually starts probably in the peripheral cells. It starts sometimes months, years, or decades before the gland actually becomes so dysfunctional that TSH rises and T4 drops.
Yeah, I want my listeners to know that your thyroid is just like the powerhouse of the cell. Just like the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, your thyroid is the powerhouse of your metabolism. And if you do not have a healthy functioning thyroid and you're not able to utilize and absorb your thyroid hormone, your whole entire body is not going to be working optimally. So my question to you is, what are the top things and contributors to cellular hypothyroidism that limit the absorption and limit the utilization of thyroid hormone beyond just stress and insulin?
Well, when we talk about what drives it, I mean, we talk about cell stress. So when we're talking about cell stress, do we have excessive cell stress? And what does that mean? Well, cells have an energy sensor, essentially. And the mitochondria is really that kind of energy sensor to find out what's going on. When there's a drop in energy in the cell, or there's some type of danger response by the cell actually goes into defensive mode and says, hey, we're going to slow the metabolism of the cell. We're going to ramp up the defense, ramp up the inflammatory process, ramp up the immune system. We're going to slow down metabolism. So what typically drives a thyroid physiology type of excessive stress? So it could be physical, falls, accidents, injuries, trauma, poor posture. It could be chemical. It could be from the foods, the chemicals from the foods we eat, the type of food we eat could be triggered by food reactivity, food sensitivities. It could be from fertilizers and pesticides, the products we put on our body, the things we wash our clothes with, that little rectangular thing you throw in the dishwasher, the chemicals in that can change it. So there's lots of chemical stressors. Everybody lays their head down on their pillow and mattress at night to go to bed, and yet we don't realize how much of stuff is being off-gassed from those things and are toxic to our system. So we've got our water supply that's loaded with chemicals, fertilizers, pesticides, antibiotics, and hormones. All that stuff you dump down the toilet that you're trying to get rid of winds up in the water supply. We wind up consuming those things. We've got emotional stress. That's, you know, how we react to the environment. You know, whether it's our spouse, our significant other, work, finances, what's going on the news, how we interpret those things creates a physical and chemical change in our body that can be perceived as cell danger or cell stress. And then we've got microbial stress. So bacteria, viruses, pathogens, all of these things, these organisms have the potential to create some stress. The challenge is, how do you avoid all the stress? The answer to that is you don't. You're never thinking of all the stress, right? And so the answer is, stress in itself isn't bad. We talked about that a little bit. There's this hormetic effect that's beneficial about some level of stress. The biggest the problem is the load, right? Mm-hmm. How much that we can tolerate. The more broken down we are, the less stress we can manage. The healthier, the more fit we are, the more stress we can manage. But excessive cell stress that pushes your cells or tissues into a danger mode is going to be the thing that initially starts deactivating your thyroid hormone in your cells and tissues out in the periphery, changes the whole thyroid signaling picture. And you can have those signs and symptoms with normal blood values, normal TSH, because the gland is still fine. And so if that excessive stress is short-lived, like, hey, I just did excessive exercise, but tomorrow I rest, I recover, that response can go away. But if the excessive stress is persistent and consistent and lasts for an extended period of time, we build on that cell stress. That cell stress creates a danger response. The danger response starts alerting the inflammatory process, the immune system, to say, hey, we're in trouble. There's some type of excessive stress here. We need to slow the metabolism down. And what we see is that the thyroid gland is one of the most perceptive tissues to these danger signals. And the thyroid gland can actually start to do self-destruction without the thyroid gland. And I think that's really a mechanism to slow global metabolism down when there's excessive stress for a prolonged period of times. And then if that stress is still there, then we start winding up with autoimmune production. And then eventually, could be months, decades later, we finally see TSH rise above lab range, T4 drop, and somebody's going to say you have a primary hypothyroidism, a thyroid gland disorder, and now you have a thyroid issue. By the time your TSH is elevated above lab range and your T4 is low, you've lost 90% of the function of your thyroid gland. That is not the beginning of a thyroid disorder. That's the end of a thyroid disorder.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because so many people can not catch that hypothyroidism when they need to be. They don't catch the antibodies. They don't catch the destruction and the cellular stress. And then it's too late.
Yeah, well, to be on the plus side, because you and I both know that, we're catching it late in the game. It may be too late for some, but for many of us, if we undo the stressors that create the issue, we can restore our thyroid physiology. I know I had Hashimoto's. I had antibodies. I had elevations in my TSH and drops in my T4. But instead of going to the medicine or the allopathic model, I looked at myself and said, hey, what am I not doing right that's driving this process? I looked at what I was doing like there was a danger response, and I needed to address that, whatever that danger response. For me at the time, I was focused on 4 hours of sleep a night because I thought it was tough, right? 4 hours is all you need. I'd get up in the morning. I'd do studying for a couple hours. I'd go train. I was doing more endurance, longer duration endurance things, duathlons and triathlons. And so, you know, you train in the morning, you study in the morning, you work all day, you coach when you get home, you take care of your family, you study at night, and you get 4 hours of sleep. You do that day in, day out. When you're 20, you might be able to adapt a little bit better. But when you're in your 40s, you need more time for recovery. And that drove my autoimmune issues. And I didn't develop just one. I developed two. I developed, you know, I was becoming insulin resistant, hypothyroid. I was becoming the patients I see on a regular basis, and I ate well and I exercised, but I had to be honest with myself as to what's going on here. Well, I'm training inappropriately. We talk about endurance training. I was training at that stage of my life. I was probably training a little bit faster for long runs than I should be, which was creating more stress response. I wasn't sleeping appropriately. I've got broken my nose so many times and have a deviated septum that I wasn't breathing well, so I had become a mouth breather. So now you just add all these stressors together, and even though my nutrition was good and I was doing a lot of the right things, the load was too heavy and it was breaking me down.
Yeah, and I can feel that in my soul as well. With my hypothyroidism, it wasn't from overworking out, it wasn't from undereating, it was simply because of overall emotional and mental stress. And that's what caused me crippling hypothyroid symptoms. For my listeners, if you have a genetic, if you have a slow comp gene, which the comp gene is responsible for downgrading your catecholamines, your epinephrine, your norepinephrine, your estrogen. If you have a slow degradation of these different hormones, then you are at heightened risk for burnout and for those fight or flight hormones, for staying warm in your body, and that can heighten your risk for having stress-induced hypothyroidism. Can't talk today. Sorry, guys. So there's a variety of things that can happen, and the reason I point this out is because I want to make sure you understand that Hashimoto's, hypothyroidism, all these disease states, they can come from a variety of stressors. There's not just one.
And there's rarely one, and that's the issue. So if somebody does a gluten-free diet, and they're hoping that, and it didn't work, didn't fix my hypothyroidism. Well, that may only be one mechanism. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're gluten intolerant, maybe that's creating some cross-reactivity, but just because you got rid of that doesn't mean you fixed the leaky gut, doesn't mean you fixed the dysbiosis in your bowel. It doesn't mean that you're sleeping well, breathing well, exercising. It doesn't mean your emotional state is great, right? To tie into what you were saying, if you have a comp SNP and that metabolism slow and you have high estrogen and you're building up those fight or flight hormones, as those values rise, you're going to get increased blood sugar, but you're also going to get a stress signal sent to your brain which says, hey, hypothalamus, increase the conversion of T4 to T3. And that's going to tell your thyroid, then what's going to happen is your hypothalamus doesn't make TRH to signal the pituitary gland to make TSH. And so now your TSH looks low. You're in this stress state and you're tired and you're fatigued because that stress state is saying, hey, brain upregulate, body slow down, we're in danger mode. And the problem, a really significant issue, is you could be in that lower TSH state, but hypothyroid for a long period of time and be told that you don't have a thyroid condition because the stress is causing the increased conversion to hypothalamus and actually hiding the fact that you have a hypothyroid condition going on. And if your doctor's only running TSH, they'll never see it because TSH will be normal. And so there's no reason to run any other tests. And in the medical model, they're typically only also running T4. It's called a TSH with reflex to T4. So if TSH is elevated or below lab range, then it reflexes to automatically run a T4 or a free T4. But if your TSH is normal because it's being suppressed by the stress response, it's going to be missed. And so that's why it's so important when we talk to people, when we look at patients, when we look at lab work, we have to look at each person individually. We need to know their story, and we have to interpret labs based on the person who's sitting in front of us. We just can't look at a lab value and say, you don't have a problem because this number says you don't. There's just too many variables that can impact a number like TSH that can make it appear normal when it really isn't.
Yeah, I like to say, if you don't feel good, there's a reason you don't feel good, and don't take those labs for an answer. If you don't feel good, you deserve to keep searching to figure out why you're not feeling good.
Yeah, and the symptoms of not feeling good are usually not the thing that needs to be addressed, right? The signs and symptoms are the body's response. Mm-hmm. So if you have a fever, you may not feel good because you have a fever. Is the fever the wrong, is that the bad thing? Or is that the body's response to something else, right? So the fever is the body's way to say, hey, we got a bacteria, we got a virus, we're gonna increase the heat, we're gonna try and burn this thing out, right? You take something to suppress your fever, we both get it. You don't feel good, you're hot, it doesn't feel good, it's uncomfortable. But in the process of suppressing the fever, you actually suppress the body's natural defensive response. And so sometimes we wind up treating the signs and symptoms and think they are the problem. And matter of fact, we wind up redefining problems as a disorder. The reason you don't feel good is because you have migraines. Well, no, the migraine's a symptom. Why am I struggling? Because you have a migraine disorder. Yeah, but so the treatment goes to the migraine. We've now called the migraine, which is the sign or the symptom, the problem, treated that, managed that. But in the meantime, we didn't even pay attention or not paying attention to what's actually causing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Okay, so my next question for you is something I get a lot, and it's talking about thyroid medications and weight gain. So What is the connection when people are put on a thyroid medication and they gain and they continue to gain excessive weight? What are contributing factors to this outside of caloric intake?
Okay, so this is a little bit complicated, but we'll get to it. The body has two regulating systems. One's what's called a homeostatic regulating system. So if everything is low stress, the body regulates thyroid hormone one way. If the body's under stress, thyroid hormone's regulated a different way. Okay. So that being said, if your thyroid gland just broke down, right, or it was removed, but everything else in your physiology was low stress, everything was working well, if you put thyroid hormone into the system, it should normalize thyroid physiology in the cells and tissues. The problem is most of us aren't in a homeostatic state when we develop hypothyroidism. We're in a stress state. So in a stress state, what happens is the conversion of T4 to T3 in the hypothalamus occurs much faster, much quicker than conversion in the body. So what happens is you take your thyroid hormone, the hypothalamus is about tenfold more sensitive to the thyroid hormone than the rest of the body. So you take your thyroid hormone, you get enough that drops TSH into normal range, and then as soon as that starts to occur and you start to get more thyroid hormone getting to that hypothalamus, the hypothalamus is saying, hey, we don't need more production here. So TSH starts to go down and you have T4 circulating. But when the hypothalamus gets saturated with thyroid hormone, it sends signals to the peripheral tissues and says, hey, I'm flooded with thyroid hormone up here. So it assumes the body is, and the cells in the body are flooded with thyroid hormone, and it actually does what we call ubiquination, or deactivates the enzyme that converts T4 to T3 inside your cells. So if you drive TSH too low because you give too much thyroid hormone, what happens in the periphery is that your cells start to actually increase that rate of thyroid hormone deactivation. There's a second piece to it. If you developed hypothyroidism because there was cell stress to begin with, and it was actually a protective mechanism, and it took you 5 or 10 years for the gland to become dysfunctional, you still probably need some hormone in the system to run it because you've become so exhausted. But now you're putting that thyroid hormone into the bloodstream, and the cells that were previously deactivating thyroid hormone, trying to get rid of it, are still going to be trying to get rid of it. So they're going to be working actually harder to get rid of it. And so we see this quite a bit with people, that they get some thyroid hormone when the gland's exhausted, they don't have enough in the tissue, so they need some thyroid hormone to support the system at this point. They'll get their thyroid hormone, the TSH will start to normalize, they feel better for the honeymoon period, so maybe a couple weeks to a couple months, and then they start to say, hey, I'm still tired, and I still have all these symptoms, and the doctor will think that driving TSH lower with more thyroid hormone will fix it. If this much didn't do it, more should be better. And that really causes the peripheral tissues to wind up deactivating even more of it, slowing the metabolism down even further. So it becomes an issue. So you can see as TSH is driven lower and lower, you'll start to see people say, I can't lose weight anymore, or I'm actually starting to gain weight, because as we like to do in the US, more is always better, right? And in this situation, thyroid hormone has a hormetic effect. If you don't have enough, that's a problem. If you give too much, it's a problem. And so you have to find the sweet spot, but even that's not enough. That's where you and I come in functional medicine, and say, okay, we've got enough thyroid hormone to stay stable. Now we got to get busy and figure out what's going to make the thyroid physiology actually work better, so that maybe in the long run, you don't need this thyroid hormone medication, because the physiology corrects and the autoimmune process starts to reverse and the thyroid gland starts to work again.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because so many people think that they're going to be stuck on hypothyroid medication for the rest of their lives. And that's not what we want to see, right? We want to fix the underlying physiological reason why somebody has hypothyroidism. Now, if it comes down to destruction of the thyroid, of course, if you have destruction of the thyroid, you can't produce enough thyroid hormone, you're going to have to take medication. But if you catch it early, or if your thyroid is not completely damaged, or if there's a secondary reason for your hypothyroidism, then you can potentially not have to be on that thyroid medication for the rest of your life. Now, you mentioned thyroid medications, the TSH, and the downregulation within the cell. So with the thyroid and thyroid medications, do you find that there are medications that tend to work better for others, other than looking at if somebody has conversion issues or not?
So,
because I find it very person-by-person dependent, and I find it very interesting.
It is. I would say if we're looking at, the vast majority of thyroid hormone circulating is T4. Okay, so most people will do well with T4 hormone. The vast majority of the cells actually prefer T4 hormone and convert inside the cell. Almost all the cells will take in some level of T3, but a lot of cells prefer to have T4. So it's the circulating level, it hangs around longer, so T4 is probably the better model for a lot of people. Now, which one's better? Levothyroxine, Synthroid, Tyrosine. Tyrosine is probably the cleanest of those versions. And whether it's mindset or it's something else, I have patients who put them on Tyrosine, they don't do as well as when is Synthroid, or they do better on one versus the other. I would prefer non-generic if somebody's getting something, because I think there's a whole can of worms you could get to when you start to talk about the quantity or the quality of generic medications, but that's for a different day. some people do really well in a glandular product, an Armor product. I think some people actually do even straight T3 and pulse that. I am not a person who does or who recommends typically T3 type therapy, and there's a couple of reasons, and I don't know if you want to get into that or not, but the biggest concern I have with a lot of people is docs in the functional medicine space, you say, because your reverse T3 is elevated, we're going to put you on T3 versus T4, and that's going to lower your reverse T3 because reverse T3 blocks T3 receptors. That's not true. Okay, so reverse T3 does not bind to the receptors inside the nucleus or the mitochondria. As far as I know, I've read probably 1,000 papers and I haven't seen that documented anywhere. There are receptors that reverse T3 can bind to on the outside of the cell that can block T4 and T3 binding, and those are called integrin receptors. And I don't necessarily think preventing reverse T3 to binding to those integrin receptors is always a great idea. We want those reverse T3 to bind to those receptors at times. There's a reason for it. And so I think when docs are saying, hey, I'm okay with the idea that, hey, we're giving you some T4, it's not working as well as we want, we're gonna try Armor T4, T3, or we're gonna try something else, but doing it with the intention that I'm gonna give you T3 instead of T4 because it's going to prevent reverse T3 from blocking the nuclear receptors is not factual. And if somebody's got a paper that proves me wrong, I'm more than happy to reverse my thoughts on that, but I just haven't seen it yet. I think for each individual, it's you know, dependent on them how they recommend the cleanest version. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, for some people who are listening to this and they know I'm a functional medicine practitioner, I don't prescribe, but they may think it's heresy for me to say, hey, you need thyroid hormone. Listen, if somebody's in crisis mode and their gland can't make it, they need some thyroid hormone, but we can't stop there. We need to give them as minimal amount of thyroid hormone to keep the system running. And then we have to do our jobs as the functional medicine practitioner to say what's causing this. The allopathic physician, they can help us out. They can get us some thyroid hormone potentially to get the system up, get the person out of crisis. And then we have to get to work from functional medicine because that's our wheelhouse to identify root cause issues and start to help the person get to a point where they can restore their physiology and get their thyroid back on. Just because you've been diagnosed with primary hypothyroidism does not mean that your thyroid gland cannot come back online. It can. I see it all the time with patients that are able either to massively reduce the dose of thyroid medication or a lot of patients get off of it completely as a result of fixing root cause issues.
Very much. Well said. And I'm very thankful for all your knowledge. Thank you so much for sharing and coming on my podcast today. I know you are a very busy man, so thank you so much. I'm really excited because you have a book coming out, right?
Absolutely. The book is it's a long time coming. I wrote it with a friend of mine, Dr. Kelly Halderman. She's a medical doctor. And we talk about, the book's all about, it's called Thyroid Debacle. So we talk about the problem that we see with how we evaluate and treat hypothyroidism currently. And it's kind of shifting the conversation away from how we look at it now to this idea that hypothyroidism isn't actually the problem. It's the body's adaptation to chronic cellular stress. So if anybody's struggling with hypothyroidism or they want to learn more about this idea or a different way to look at hypothyroidism, and not just how to identify it, but how to reduce the load of stress that actually triggers cellular, glandular hypothyroidism. You can go to wherever you buy books, Amazon, was it Barnes & Noble's, but we're in pre-order now, so they can go to anywhere where books are sold and put in your order now. And hopefully the book is, right now we're looking at probably July for the release of the book.
That's so exciting. Congrats. I know that took a lot of work. Yeah, but I'll have my order in, that's for sure. Well, thank you so much again. Can you tell my listeners where they can find you, follow you? I know I've shared Dr. Eric Balkovich. He has his Instagram. It's easy. It's his name. Everything will be in the description below. But where can they find you? And if they want to work with you, where can they do so?
So they can go to rejuvigencenter.com. That's my office website. And if they've got thyroid questions or health questions, they can just go right there and schedule a discovery consult. I give everybody the opportunity to do that, where I can have a short conversation with them, make sure we might be compatible, we're headed in the right direction. If somebody's looking to learn more about thyroid physiology, then go to the Thyroid Answers podcast and listen to episodes of that. I do have a number of videos, probably 100 different videos on YouTube, talking about thyroid physiology and a number of other aspects of physiology. And then I'm probably most prolific on Instagram, even though I didn't know what Instagram was a year and a half ago. That's probably where I post most of my content.
Well, you're crushing it.
Maybe.
Well, keep it up. Thank you so much again. You guys, make sure you also check out his podcast, Thyroid Answers Podcast. Everything will be in the description below. And thank you guys again for listening.